Okay, well, firstly, thank you for inviting me here today, and I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land here. Please be clear that I'm not here to talk on New South Wales mob. I'm not even Queensland, I don't think. I'm from Cairns, from Innisfail, around those areas there, and that's where our relationship lies, although we do have lots of connections throughout Australia, and we do have a lot of community involvement in southeast Queensland. So you may agree with the things that I'm saying, and then you may not agree with them, and that's fine with me. I guess probably I was very, very lucky to be manager of the Indigenous Engagement Project that happened the last 3 years, and there's been some huge outcomes from those nationally, and I'll talk to you about a couple of those today. I was even asked to speak at the OECD, the delegation that came out here, about innovations, and we were able to talk about how Indigenous people, how innovative they are in terms of technology that also takes in the scope of a whole number of things. So it's had some huge impact, and people who have been in our teams have won national training awards and have been recognised through reconciliation programs and by governments right across Australia. So it has been quite an amazing ride. And I'm not saying that I know everything. I only know little bits and pieces, and I think this is a fantastic project, and we might be able to draw from some of the experiences that we've learnt. But I might take you through a couple of the projects that has brought me to this point, I guess, if that's all right with you. I'll talk about a couple of projects and what's happened and what's been a feature of those projects, what's been achieved and any lessons. I'll talk about the role of champion or mentor because they were really key to all of those projects and how they developed. And we all know ourselves about the role of other people within the community. I'm down here, my husband's playing football. He's not playing football, he's picking the Indigenous side of the century, and he's down here to pick the Indigenous side to play in the World Cup. And they are talking about mentors, about the coach, and about people who are under. It's just the way that we develop ourselves. I think it's a way that it's not a new concept, I don't think. But the role of the champion, as we call them, and I wouldn't suggest that you call them champions, but they are very instrumental in the whole project. So as I said, I'll just put into a bit of historical context, and you might agree or you may not agree. Isolation is in a variety of ways. Geographically, in some locations it'll take up to 3 days in the dry season to get from place to place. People are also socially remote. It doesn't mean to say that because you're in a whole group of people that you feel like you're, you know, part of a group. I mean, and I'll talk to that. You can be culturally remote, you can be linguistically isolated, not only from mainstream but between each other. People come bringing different, you know, different roles and different experiences. And the perception that all Aboriginal people are the same is quite wrong. However, the reality is that we are vastly different. We have languages that are different, different dialects spoken. People in some states and territories do not like being called Indigenous. They do not like being called Aboriginal. So I think that's probably something that you might have to grapple with here. New South Wales, you talk about Aboriginal people. Does that isolate Torres Strait Islander people? Do you have a large population of Torres Strait Islander people? Are you looking at encouraging Torres Strait Islander people into the public sector too? Is it Indigenous? I mean, people in the territory don't like to be called Indigenous. They are Aboriginal people and Aboriginal people alone. But it's very different elsewhere. People in Western Australia don't like the terminology either. They want to be called Aboriginal people. They don't like Indigenous. Whereas people in southeast Queensland, they're Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islanders. So that's probably something that you might want to consider for a start. Okay, I guess probably people who have also been socially excluded, and we know all about land rights and voting rights and social issues. Education training in lots of areas that we've been through takes a back seat. There are complexities in terms of geography, languages, remoteness, cultural differences, and political and social impacts. Funded projects that we've had over the past 3 years, as you can see, they have been right across Australia, and some of those in some states and territories have linked up with each other and found good value in bringing all their differences together. So we've had Open Learning Institute in Queensland that was based from in southeast Queensland and went right through the Torres Straits, Mull Island and St Paul's and back out Western Queensland. New South Wales North Coast was a different kind of community all again. They looked at putting e-hubs into around the community, which was very successful. So, and I think that we probably look at that in about 5 years' time, and we'll find that that group of people possibly now have more access to computer ownership and able to get on the net, and they've learned some really, really good, there's some really good stories that have come out of that. An e-hub is a bank of computers where on the community themselves, and people will come and go at any time. The elders, it's mainly run by the elders, and you know, they mentor little kids and little kids mentor them. And so they are now, their latest project is that they have made a representation to the state and the local governments to change all the names that on their signs into traditional names, the street signs and things. So that's a bit of a coup for them, because they have used their digital cameras to make their pictures and then their words, and they've submitted all that. So they're very proud of the work there. So they've had about three e-hubs, but they've now put them, I think they've got nearly eight that are running now. So in terms of a champion, there was a young girl that was on the community, only very quiet girl. She's probably very, very young, lots of little kiddies. And the last time I went there, she was going in the afternoon to one of the e-hubs and mentoring kids to do their homework. So they'd all arrive there at a certain time. They'd have something to eat. They'd have, they'd play a bit on the computer, but they had to do their homework. There's no noise. If you didn't go to school, you didn't go to play on the computers. And so she was there not only learning, but,
So it's a learning centre for all ages in the community.
Yes, but it's a place that people meet also, but it's also about learning the technology and so on. So there's been some really nice stories that have come out of that.
What about technical support?
That a lot of these are just not plucked into one community. There's support from the TAFE College or whomever. Okay. And you've got really good people that are in there and give their time and so on, you know, which is a little bit unfair, but they wouldn't have it any other way, I don't think. And they link in with Workventures who source computers from, say, Westpac and places like that. Mm-hmm. They refurbish them, and they have a partnership with Microsoft, and they give them the software. So, you know, they've built up this and this relationship. So lots of people in the community have computers now at their own homes and so on. So great story. New South Wales Western, they looked at e-governance, and there's some fantastic stories that have come out of that I absolutely adore. Central Gippsland were looking at using GPS technology to track down areas of significance and give people training about documenting those areas and then going back and putting it into the department's databases and so on. Kimberley College of TAFE are looking at RPL using digital stories, and so we're thinking that that's going to be a really big thing in the next couple of weeks that will come out. It's about using digital stories to gather evidence to do RPL, because the people up in those areas, English is their fourth and fifth language. Mm. Tropical North Queensland, they've also developed it's called Making It Real. It's about making the resource available to everybody in the community, but you can change it to make it look like wherever you are. So you can change, on the front of it are the people from Lockhart River, and it'll have four places that are consistent with each community. So you might have a shop, you might have a school, you might have, the medical centre, I think. So you'll have people on the front talking about what's inside, but you can change that to your own area. If you were living in the Kimberleys, you can change the front. You can change the very easily without having too much technical expertise. So, and one of the projects for this year is that there will be an addition onto that, and it will be more along the financial and banking and so on. So, but what's sitting under the resources within that Making It Real, the one from Tropical North, is all the numeracy and literacy from level 1 to 4, I think. Oops. I guess probably you can see where I've travelled in the last couple of years. Wow. So all the little yellow places are where the projects were. So over here in Perth in the Western Wheatbelt area. Mm-hmm. So it's getting all those people that are sitting in those tele centres to come together and use the technology to maybe bridge the gap in some way. Up to Broome in the Kimberleys, we've seen some nice instances of project managers, project champions who are now becoming project managers and are now mentoring other individuals. Right up there to Darwin, Elko Island and Gower Community, Camomile is probably one of the success stories of this project. Brisbane, Bourke, all those places there that we've been to too in terms of e-governance. This one here was a project that set up there in Elko Island, and what they set out to do was to use internet banking, to learn how to use the internet and internet banking. At first it was, oh yeah, that's a good thing to do. But the implications of having people empowered enough to be able to use technology, the flow on was a lot greater. I didn't have a true appreciation for just to go to Darwin to even do any kind of transaction to sell any of their intellectual property or whatever they were going to sell, whatever they had, their weaving or whatever to do, they'd have to go to Darwin even to cash a check. If someone sent them a check, they'd have to get $100 check, $800 to get to Darwin and back. Now they have an ABN, they just do their transaction online. And it's really quite amazing the stuff that they have done. Meredith and I have lectured and we've talked to international conferences. When I first went to see her, her language is the fifth, her English is her fifth language. In the end, we had a national conference in Brisbane. We had 120 people. And I just said at the very end, does any of our champions want to stand up and talk? You know, because... And she just got up and spoke in front of everybody. It was just amazing. As I say, English is their fourth and fifth language, so really, really good people. That's where they live. And that's the lady there, Meredith. And the other project champion is the other gentleman over there. And that's how they do their work. So what we did, we had a project champion that was attached to each one of the projects, and we asked them to come to Cairns. And of course, I like to be on time, you know, everything's got to be, you know, so everyone's got to be in Cairns at 8 o'clock on Monday. As I say, I had no appreciation. It took them 3 days. It took them the day to get off the island and then to fly across and then to, they had to have a stay over in Weeper and then further on. But not only that, I've put everyone in a room like this, and then there were a couple of people, and there was a gentleman, he walked out and she walked in, and it was, I thought, oh my God, what have I done here? You know, but I didn't realise that they had poison relationships and they really couldn't talk to each other, and here I was wanting them to share everyone's secrets, right? And put them on a little plane too and made them fly all that way and they're not allowed to talk to each other. They've got to talk over the back. And so I learned a lot. That's why I have a huge appreciation for what they do and how they live. So they're very isolated, yeah. And what they have done now is they've set up a co-op and they brought their food in, combat their diabetes and so on. So the community's now using the technology easily and using it for their own devices, not probably what we set out to do. And the nice part is that they can keep whatever they develop. I went up there to Darwin, and I couldn't believe that, as I say, we used to set up for that, and they had built e-books, so they wanted to keep all their stories of their community, but they set up their own e-books in their own language with all the text down one side. And I was thinking, oh, this is and head for disaster, you know, there's IP issues because obviously some wasn't on theirs. And before I even had a chance to talk about it, they said, well, please don't, you can see it here, but we can't go out of the room because we haven't cleared it with Education Department's IP area. So they had it all under control, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So the other one was in a place right up in out from Mount Isa, and it is a really good partnership between government, the local landholders, Seymour White, which is building the main roads out there, and the main roads department and so on, and Mount Isa TAFE. And the gentleman out there, his name's Colin Saltmere, and he is the Aboriginal community own that land there, and they're building the roads out there. But to get people out to that community, it's a long way, and they live in Dongas, and he's very strict. You know, and then you go to work, and then you come home, so it's a working environment. So and it's pretty harsh. The fellow out there, he does business really well. He's a he invites all the heads of department, and they all go out there. He feeds them up. We have a big feed, and we have a good chat, and then we come down and do business, and then like, who, what are you going to pay for? They can't go back and say, have to go and see my boss because they are the boss.
Right.
And you know that that flight's leaving soon and you're going to be there. If you don't get out of there, then you're never going to get out. So, and yes, so that's how he does business. Everything is sorted out.
Yes.
So what his idea was, trying to get people from some fairly places where there's lots of turmoil, like in Palm Island, and try and get people out to community, but also showing them what's it like. So they developed a resource, and it's this... jobs, wherever it is, here. And on the front, so this will give you a bit of an idea in terms of building a resource. He shows what it's like. So he's the mentor. He wants to be called a champion because he reckons we are championing. We are, you know, but a very strong Murray man. You'll see his image on the front and he'll talk about it, and it's a virtual tour, what it's like to live on the community. Yeah, what to expect and so on. What has happened from here is that any submissions or anything that they do, they hold this up. He always says it's because of the framework's input, but it is really his. He's a very strong man, as I said. So anyone who is trained through their organisation out there, Estrada, Main Roads, will put them on straight away. But they must be trained via this, and maybe must be trained via... must have to go through that first.
Okay.
And they just have got, I don't know how many trainees appointed now. It's about letting you know what you're in for. It's like any job. You'd like to know, where could this lead me? It might be hard in the beginning. It's drug and alcohol free. You've got to get up and be on that bus. If you're not, we'll feed you, we'll give you this. This is where you'll live. However, we'll look after your money for you. We've got people from Westpac come in, and you fly home every now and again. We put money in trust for you.
Is it just young people?
No.
So it's all ages.
No, it's all ages. Yeah. I ran Colin the other day. He just said just a while ago that the department had now given him another $800,000 to build a gym out there, so that there's other distractions and things out there. But they've won national training awards at Hobart last year. It's a great story. As I say, I don't think that we started off to do that, but there's the role of a champion again, coming out strong, a strong person knowing what he wants. And, you know, I think he mentors us too, a little bit too. Mm-hmm. But he believes in mentoring other people around him and in other states and territories too. So that's a really strong man. We probably distributed about 3,000 CDs, and it also has really strong ties to the mining and extractive industries projects, mainstream stuff. You know, they don't move unless they talk to Myuma or Colin. The technology is just not the be-all and end-all.
Oh, sure,
it is a part
sure.
of it. Mm. These networks and those loose and those structured networks are the most are very important.
Of course.
But the technology, I think, can be a way to assist, to bring people together. As I say, that community now feels that they are part of everything else. Yeah. It was about getting people prepared, so that's not even talking about technology. And it's been nationally received, as I say, and it's recognised as a really good model. One of the projects was about e-governance, because the laws had changed in New South Wales at the time. The legislation meant that all small organisations, they had to have some training in governance. And so how do they do that? And what would happen if they didn't get in? You know, non-Indigenous people would come in and take over, and that was not an option to those really strong communities out there. That was not an option. So they already had the skills, so they had to either have them proven, or and even the Gulgandra and Will Meringle, and being a project manager, you think, you know, yes, they are doing, we'll have a little phone call, and you know, you're always in the back of your head, I wonder if this is working or not. So I have travelled all those ways, and I loved every minute of it. And I travelled by car from Dubbo to all those places.
Mm.
And we went to a place called Will Meringle, and I had a meeting there at 1 o'clock, and there's just absolutely no one. There's kangaroos. Seriously, there's kangaroos jumping around. There's a community place, and doors are not locked. All the computers are sitting there. Not a spot of dirt. It's just beautiful, lovely kitchen. Go and set in. 1 o'clock comes, and there's people walking out of the houses. They've got their workbooks under their arms. They come in, sit down, put their earphones on, fire up the satellite, put their passwords in, and do their training. Close their books up and go home. So it was just like, oh my goodness, my work here is done. So, but it brought people together, and it also having those people now being able to take part in their own communities. But it's not only that, it's people in the community now being part of the wider communities, sitting on kindergartens and schools and so on. It's not just only specific to their own organisations now. And as I say, it was about an opportunity to be part of the wider community. So what have we learnt? I think I learnt that the training has to be, it has to be for a purpose. It has to be meaningful. The role of the project champion or the mentor is key. It has to be accepted. One of the projects was driven from a room in an institute. No one knows. No one really. It's never going to work. It's
ownership.
Never. Pardon?
Ownership.
You have to own it. You're part of it. You know. As I say, Colin Saltman, he's a really busy man. And if I was to say to him, "Can you come down and present it?" Yep. Straight away. I'll pay my fare, or you can reimburse. Whatever. You know. There. He just wants to show that this is possible. And that's what a true champion is about, I think, or a true mentor. But our role as coordinators, we have to understand that if you don't assist people and don't go and have a look at the value of their projects, they could just go by the wayside. Yeah. Mm. And I could tell you people who are in who are any part of those projects, but help them with the applications. So help them. Things happen in communities, you know. There are changes and there's incidents and there's a whole range of... You've got to be flexible and understanding, a true understanding, because people will find their own way if once they have ownership of it. It's about cultural knowledge being shared too. It's not as if... I don't think we're so... We'll give you, in terms of our cultural knowledge, we'll give you what we want, but and there's really good stuff, and right across the whole sector, I think that a lot of these projects too have been, it has opened people's eyes. The technology is only just one part. As I say, it has to be meaningful. I think that the project champions are the single most important. It's good for them to have a knowledge of VET. They have to be people who are highly regarded. And the role has to be highly regarded too. There has to be importance on that role. So I'm guessing what I'm saying, the role of the mentor has to be highly regarded too. And then there has to be an opportunity to have that developed into a higher level of knowledge, I guess, and leadership. I think in all of this project we've seen people's self-esteem absolutely growing, in not that we were playing catch-up, that we were setting the pace. Lots of other project teams now model what's been done there. Projects like this, I think, are fairly difficult in that there is participation and that the involvement has to be, I'm trying to choose my words here, has to be valued. It can't be just lip service. It has to be valued. I was going to wrap up by saying that I was going to raise a couple of things, but they're not more important than the other. We've just talked about the terminology, about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, and it's a, as I said, we're all the same, but we're all different. I think there's the issue about line management is really something that you would need to consider. I've just wrote down a whole series of dot points that I think who needs to be aware of the project and individuals who are on the project. I think if you have those networks of people who know who's on these projects, I think that's really important to make, not a fuss, but to have some structure to their mentoring. If there's, I always think that it's really nice to have, I think it's important to have a mentor who is knowledgeable within your department, but also another Koori person who was maybe not in the same department but elsewhere. That's, to me, is really important. When I first came into our department in Queensland, I had a fairly high-level senior person who was my mentor. She was a non-Indigenous lady. She's now our Director General, so that was a few years ago. But we also had a network within ourselves who would come to meet. We'd meet each other and have a formal process in talking about what our issues were and so on. I'm disappointed that project hasn't been able to be rolled out a lot more because there is value in it of having a formal contract, loosely based, but a formal contract. and a very loose arrangement also.
And in the model you were in, who mentored the mentors? So who was the support for?
Well, as I say, they were senior people. Mm. Mine was the director of a TAFE college, but they were like executive directors at that level. So it was.
But who guided the process? And maybe that's.
It was people within the department themselves.
Yeah, so there was like a whole plan and the mentors were part of that plan.
But to be able to, as a low level into the workforce, having someone at that level who you had access to and could email or could talk to, I mean, that put a lot of emphasis and a lot of importance on that role.
Yeah. And did you have the opportunity in that to communicate with other people,
The Murray people? Yes, definitely. We had we had fairly structured meetings.
Okay.
You know.
So other new people who were entering TAFE or public sector up there. Yeah. So that's something that we were talking about with this program, was having that sort of communication with more than one mentor, perhaps, as well as with each other.
So. I think in... But there's so many things to consider. I went to an awards ceremony the other day, 500 people, and there was one other Aboriginal person in that whole room. I won the leadership award for the whole department, would you believe?
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, leadership from any chair. And there was one other young girl as I walked out, and she smiled at me because we're the only ones. And she, you know, that made her feel, I know that it made her feel really pretty proud. But, you know, in that whole environment, the whole of the department, only one person in that whole room, I think, is not very good. It's overwhelming to have not see other Indigenous people around you. And that's what I think in some departments. That's why you lose people, because you feel there's a sense of alienation that you don't have that connection with. You've just got to see someone. I think you just got to know that they're in the room or they're somewhere close to you. It's probably something that I can't explain as much, but it's about having someone close to you without going too far away. So, but it's about, I think the technologies will be an enabler to be able to bring people through an informal network and through a formalised network too. Not only can they talk to each other by the technology, but I think that having those informal networks in some ways. I think if you give people the choice about the technologies, you know, you might want to set up Facebook. I know you might be able to access it through the department.
You mentioned that to me.
You may.
Are they comfortable in Facebook? You know,
I would think so.
Yeah.
It's interesting because your objective isn't about technology. Your objective is about relationships and growth and mentoring. So your objectives are very human ones. It's just you're going to be maximising technologies that enable.
Well, those social networking type sites as well seem to be probably preferred in a way, so they can communicate.
But it sort of doesn't matter which ones. That won't be the success factor.
Well, it would be good to let them choose.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it is. I mean, if someone said to me, you've got to go off and learn this and oh, okay, but I might use it a bit less than what I would like to do if I was using MSN or if I was using some other... Facebook's not the only one. There's a whole heap, but they're the ones that'll be able to tell you.
People already use a lot. Like it just,
that's
right. You know,
that's what you could.
It's finding out what they're using. Yeah.
I remember when Rachel Hunter was she was like one of the top dogs, you know. And here I was, I'd come in, but I had an appointment with her, and you know, she had an interest in seeing how I was going. You know, someone from that high level could then pick up the opportunity and say, you know, why don't you try doing this? And here are your skills in that. You know, why don't you come and sit on a steering group for this? So they're the ones that really have. It's almost like a career push too. You know, someone at those levels might be able to say, oh, there's something that's happening over here. You might be interested in just reading up on these.
And perhaps also with that, you haven't got that problem of the confusion between mentor and line manager. You know, that. Far apart.
Well, you're not likely to go and talk to your line manager and say you're not giving me enough, you know, support here. Well, I might, but someone who's just come into the department certainly wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think. I mean, these are all things that for you to consider, and I'm probably not coming with some hard and fast rules. It's just instances that I've seen over the time. As I say, there's discussion boards, there's online chats. You already all know all those things, but I think that it's about letting people be aware of what the technology is there for them to use.
Mm.
Well, it has been great, and as I say, we've seen some people rise up through the ranks with these, you know, that are now going back to their community and using the technology in the Kimberleys. They do Illuminate sessions for their housing meetings, and they train each other. And young people love the technology, but don't assume that everybody has access or does have an understanding of all the technologies. I think I made that mistake somewhere along the line.
And
too.
Organisational firewalls, if you're looking at public sector agencies, you
won't be able to do it.
Big surprises.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
we're on the Premier's internet.
I imagine that's absolute.
Yeah.
Carry a picture.
My favourite story recently was someone who said that they're not able. They're not able to get access to the anti-discrimination board because there's sexual harassment written on the site, and so they've banned it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. But that's actually a consideration then in terms of whether you're limited by the technologies that do exist in departments, or because that's where people will be working. So you might need to.
And as I say, the OECD were really excited about. You know, set off to do this small thing, but ended up with almost social change.